honorable members from the select committee, our colleagues from the provinces, minister, the management from
recording in progress
Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, the CEDGs who are here with us, also the staff of the committee and that of Parliament in general. Thank you very much. We are meeting this afternoon. We had a meeting in the morning. We had a briefing from the entities of the Department of Labor, supported the enterprise, the UIF, as well as the compensation fund. So we agree that we'll be meeting this afternoon at 2 to receive a briefing from the minister on the outcomes of the AGOA summit that was held at the beginning of this month, November. Without wasting any time, I will check with Ms. Madia in terms of the attendance and if there are any apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for not switching on my video. I've got load shedding at the moment. In terms of our members in attendance, at the moment we have yourself, Honourable Mwemang, Honourable Mamarahane, and Honourable Boshoff. I'm sure the other members will also join us shortly. From the provincial legislatures, we've got Honourable Mari from the Western Cape Provincial Legislature, Honourable Tomo from the Mpumalanga Provincial Legislature, and Honourable Tisu from the Free State Provincial Legislature. The apologies that we have at the moment, she is from Honourable Mashodi, and then also from the Northern Cape and Limpopo Provincial Legislatures. My colleagues in attendance today is my our committee assistant, Mr. Bazir, and the NCOP Procedural Advisor, Advocate Ali. The rest of the colleagues will follow, Chair.
Thank you so much. If you can just follow up with the Honourable Ambassador Tango, I see he's calling me now, but I'm unable to take his call. If you can help me with that. AP Fund Westhaven.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to let you know that I'm also from the Western Cape and I've also joined this meeting. Thank you for the invitation.
Are you still there, Chair?
Okay. I do note that load shedding has just kicked in some areas.
Nadia, can you find out what's happened to the Chair?
I will do so. If I can maybe just ask Mr. I'll just ask, apologies for that. Let me just find out what's going on. Just give me one moment. Okay, Chair will be rejoining the platform. These load shedding just kicked in.
Achai is busy connecting with his phone.
I see him. When I spoke to him now, I just admitted him now to the group. Him on the platform.
He's connecting with his phone. Please don't call him.
Mr. Dango, can you maybe just continue in the absence of the chairperson, because he is on the platform, but we can't seem to find him. He did say that he was just switching on now with load shedding.
Well, let's give him 2 minutes. Otherwise, we'll carry on. Is Honourable Mwemang available?
Yes, he is on the platform, Mr. Dango.
Then let's ask him to chair in the meantime until the chairperson comes on to the system.
No, I have not blocked you, and I have not muted you either. I'm trying to, in fact, you, I don't know what's going on, but I have not unmuted you. I've not muted you. And it doesn't give me options to unmute you either, because I have muted you. I don't know what's going on. Do you want to maybe just log in and log back in again? And I'll just ask Mr. Mwemang just to carry on until you come back online.
Honourable Mwemang, won't you proceed with the meeting until the chairperson joins? If you can hear me.
Yes, Ambassador.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Oh, no, sir, it's fine, because...
it's fine, okay, it's good.
Right.
Sorry, I forgot that we're starting, the load shedding was starting at 2, so I didn't make necessary arrangements. Now, I was trying to use my phone, but it says that the host doesn't allow a participant to unmute themselves, so I've been trying. So, yeah. I'm back now. I'm hotspotting. I don't know where the time I got cut. I think Mr.
We understand, Chair. We all have load shedding problem.
Okay. I think Mr. Van Westhuizen was on the platform at the time. I don't know.
Yes,
Van Westhuizen.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. I was just busy saying that I'm also in the meeting, and thank you for the invitation.
All right, thank you so much. I think then, without wasting any time, Mr. Slegu?
Thank
you so much. We welcome your attendance. Let me, without wasting any time, hand over to the minister to brief us on the outcomes of the AGOA. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good afternoon to you, and I'd like to also greet the other members of the Select Committee, as well as the representatives from the provinces that are present here. The outcomes to the AGOA forum. I do so recognizing that the committee has had quite a blistering program as it tries to complete its work before the end of the current session of Parliament and of the NCOP in particular, and both in the executive and in the legislature, nationally as well as provincially. I'm sure we're all working flat out now. Chairperson, I'm going to ask Tsulu Mbushi just to flight some of the briefing notes that I will use to organize my comments and my remarks on. And I do so by way of starting with a few introductory remarks. Colleagues will recall from the NCOP and from the participants who are present here today that in September this year, the DTIC briefed the Joint Select and Portfolio Committees on the planned AGOA forum. And we were also joined by representatives of the provinces. On slide number 3, I recall there briefly that the presentation that we did provided quite detailed information on a range of matters, entirely the economic relationship between the United States and South Africa, the legal regimes applicable to trade. I pointed out that AGOA was one of three mechanisms or route to market for South African exporters, and that it is due to expire in September 2025. We noted in that presentation South Africa's efforts to secure an extension of AGOA beyond 2025 and informed the joint committee meeting of the then forthcoming AGOA forum, which was scheduled for early November 2023. So today, Chairperson, I'd like to build on that. And in my remarks, I want to take the information that we provided at the last meeting as given, as information that members of the committee would be familiar with. And I would focus on a brief summary of the AGOA forum and its outcomes. On the next slide, we recall that South Africa hosted what is the 20th AGOA forum that was held in Johannesburg from 2 to 4 November this year. It was the largest forum of the AGOA forums to date. It drew in the governments of the United States and more than 30 African countries, the private sectors, both from our own continent and the US, civil society, organized labor representatives. It had exhibitors, procurers, investors, observers, and visitors to the exhibition. I'm pleased that we also had a delegation of South African members of parliament who attended plenary sessions. The forum itself comprised of 16 distinct platforms or forums with over 5,000 participants, and I will share with the committee in a moment what those platforms and forums entailed. We were also joined through recorded messages by members of Congress who provided their support for AGOA. These included Democrats and Republicans, and the chairs and the ranking members of both the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee. At the forum itself, members of Congress were represented by the chief trade counsels and advisors, because the forum took place shortly after the resolution of the standoff in the U.S. Congress over a House speaker, and so they had some important votes and matters to attend to. The AGOA forum, of course, the U.S. representatives were led by my counterpart, who is the Trade Secretary in the United States, going by the title of the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Catherine Tai. And it had representatives from a number of different agencies and departments of the U.S. government. The AGOA forum was officially opened by President Ramaphosa, who emphasized the importance of an early and a long renewal of AGOA, and he highlighted the importance of regional value chains and South Africa's role in those value chains. On the next slide, I want to recall, and it will be both slide number 5 and number 6, what were the various activities, platforms, and forums that constituted the overall 20th African Growth and Opportunity Act Forum. First, we had a session, a meeting of African trade ministers, which considered African challenges, and we identified a number of trade opportunities. We had the AGOA US-Africa Government-to-Government Forum, which stretched over 2 days, with participants from the U.S. administration, congressional advisors, fellow ministers from other African countries, and observers from business and labor. In all, more than 30 African countries participated, and we had sessions on different parts of AGOA, trade policy issues, value chains, challenges, opportunities. It was quite an intense set of activities. And in addition to that, in parallel, we convened a private sector forum drawing together investors and business people to consider trade and investment opportunities. There was a labor forum. It was the first labor forum at AGOA, which provided a platform for worker voices from both the United States and African countries. There was a civil society forum. It included women and youth. We had a meeting of trade officials to identify key trade concerns and opportunities. There was a focus on competition and trade, where we had speakers and engagement from participants. We had a SMME and women in trade focus area. There was a workshop on technical standards and trade. And on the next page, we record that we also had, in addition to these activities, a Made in Africa exhibition that showcased products from 538 firms drawn from 19 different African countries. And these were both stand-alone products where a company would make a significant product, but it also showed cross-border value chains, how Africans are collaborating with each other to produce products. It features small businesses as well as large advanced manufacturing facilities. There was an African food market with African cuisine from West and East Africa, and of course, Southern Africa too. We had an African heritage and culture walk, highlighting the origin of humanity on the continent, African civilizations. We looked at Timbuktu, Mapungubwe, the impact of slavery and colonialism, the struggles for freedom on the African continent, and the reconstruction of African societies in the post-colonial period. There was an African fashion show, bringing fabrics and clothing together, that showcases the potential to export high-value products that can bring money to the African continent and dress the world up in a more interesting way than is ordinarily done. We had an African film, music, and art focus, and this was highlighting a growing export to global audiences. We looked at locally made films. South Africa is increasingly seeing the opportunity to get films that we make about our story onto Netflix and other platforms. There was the art of Esther Mashlangu, the music of Gugu Nzenze and Ladysmith Black Mambazo. We had a bilateral network of meetings between governments, different governments met bilaterally, and there were also private sector meetings. And finally, we had a procurement network that was held in parallel with the forum. Supply chain managers and procurement specialists from the US and African countries meeting with exhibitors and companies based here on the continent. So these 16 separate activities were all brought together under the umbrella of the forum, and of course they reinforced each other and spoke to very similar themes. The African trade ministers had already met in 2021 and 2022 to develop a common position on the future of AGOA. They met again on the 2nd of November to reflect on recommendations that had come from senior trade officials and from ambassadors. I had addressed a meeting of African ambassadors in the United States earlier this year, and I'd also virtually joined African ambassadors on an online platform where they had met in Washington about 3 weeks before the forum. And that, the African countries have developed a unified position to advocate for early extension of AGOA for at least 10 years, with existing beneficiaries all retained. And we agreed to make proposals to enhance AGOA, including the removal of U.S. trade restrictions on particular African products, as well as to consider product coverage expansion and the reduction of red tape. On the next slide, I wanted to draw the committee's attention to the study that had also been done by the U.S. ITC in April this year, that made a number of points that some countries leverage AGOA for exports fairly well, and South Africa in particular is the largest user of AGOA, but utilization rates remain low for many countries. That while exports of agricultural products like cotton and cocoa are important sectors for a number of African countries, on their own they don't provide a sufficient pathway for poverty reduction. And that competitive infrastructure weaknesses hamper substantial development and the industry potential that there is in AGOA. So we've got to be able to address all of these. The forum was an opportunity to reflect on the emerging global context and engage in strategic discussions with the United States on potential areas of cooperation, including the scope to partner with the U.S. on green industrialization, including African manufacturing, such as the reconfiguration of supply chains and the use of critical raw materials to facilitate the development of manufacturing on our continent, and mechanisms to complement the GOA to achieve its intended objectives of wider economic development.
Apologies, Chair. There seems to be an issue with YouTube not streaming.
Yeah. Can we just see if there's anyone from the communications on the platform? Secretary, is there anyone from the communications, Mado or?
And Mado is not on the platform, but we will follow up with the streaming service today because they have been given the link, but we will follow up with them just to find out where they are.
Oh, all right. Thank you so much. That will be follow up then, the updated Honorable Murray. Thank you. You can continue, Honorable Minister.
Thank you. On the next slide, we then report on some of the key outcomes that came from the engagement with the United States. And I'm turning then to slide number 9. The first and significant outcome was the broad support for the continuation of a GOA beyond 2025. And that was our strategic objective, to try to build wider consensus on that. And we had all African countries supporting it, but with all the speakers from the United States recognizing the value of a GOA. And there were some key announcements that were made. For example, the U.S. President made a public statement committing to his administration's support for the extension of a GOA. There were strong messages, as my second point, on the role of a GOA in fostering regional value chains. We took the example of clothing and textile value chains between Mauritius and Madagascar, and we took the automotive value chain of South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, Lesotho, Nigeria, Cote d'Ivoire, and Malawi, among others. And what these showcased to American companies and the American government is how difficult it would be to unscramble. Mauritius, for example, there was talk of Mauritius being taken out of a GOA because of its per capita income, but if it is, then that whole regional value chain that draws in Madagascar, among others, would be affected by it. We look thirdly at improving a GOA utilization rates, both to spread and to deepen the impact. And here, some of the discussion on product coverage, on restrictions that affect market access. We've noted, for example, steel and aluminium as well as beef, and the simplification of rules of origin that hamper market access. The fourth area was to address sanitary and phytosanitary measures that act as a barrier, especially for agricultural products. The fifth one was to support capacity building to allow member countries to access the U.S. market. And the sixth one was to recognize that a GOA is mutually beneficial for the Africa-U.S. economic relationship, that the United States benefits and that African participating countries benefit, and that there's a compelling argument to renew and to extend a GOA. On the next slide, we make the point that there was some consideration of how to combine both a speedy decision as well as a process to try to improve a GOA. And so on slide number 10, we note there that we floated a possible two-stage approach, with the first stage being early extension and the second stage being further improvements. We considered how to complement a GOA with other measures. We look, for example, at investment into Africa's productive sector and how to expand services to the U.S. Market. We looked at the connection between AGOA and the African Continental Free Trade Area, some of it related to accumulation rules. we address the issue of graduation and not penalizing countries for making positive progress. We are focused on how AGOA can be utilized by micro, small and medium enterprises, by women and youth-owned businesses. An African minister has called for AGOA to have a developmental dimension. And we looked at infrastructure, industrial development, areas such as technology transfer and exploring the opportunities to upscale investment, infrastructure and digital development. Post the forum, which is the next slide, as we had advised the joint committee 2 months ago, the decision on extension of AGOA is in the hands of the U.S. Congress. Congressional advisors will now brief senators and representatives on the outcomes of the forum. 2 bills on AGOA extension have already been prepared by individual legislators, and additional legislators are expected to make their position known in the next few months. That following the resolution of the deadlock on election of the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the congressional calendar will now be finalized, and once it's finalized, it will reflect the likely time frames within which U.S. legislatures or legislators expect to consider and finalize a decision on AGOA. South Africa and other African countries will engage each other, our respective private sectors, and our U.S. counterparts to consider the outcome of the AGOA forum, to step up efforts to utilize benefits, to make the case for early extension, and to enable the widest participation of countries in AGOA. On the next slide, we deal with the next steps, and there's work being done on a number of different areas. First, we're briefing Cabinet on a regular basis on key developments relating to trade and AGOA as part of the of Cabinet's overall responsibility and guidance on these matters. We provide key information. Second, we're engaging with South African business and labor stakeholders to prepare for a scale-up in the use of AGOA and to prepare for the implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area and to strengthen common messaging between stakeholders. Third, we're engaging with provincial and local stakeholders to provide information and identify opportunities in the use of AGOA and the AFC-FTA, as well as to see how these two can be used by individual firms in combination. Fourth, there are meetings of African trade ministers to consider further lobbying efforts that will be held in the first part of next year and in December this year. There's also, fifthly, a South African Investment Conference that's planned for 2024 that will, among others, highlight trade opportunities for South Africa and other AGOA beneficiaries. The sixth area is research on regional value chain opportunities and identifying additional value chains for AGOA. The seventh area is joint African meetings with U.S. administration counterparts, covering potential refinements to AGOA and possible dates for congressional decision. The eighth area is bilateral meetings with members of Congress. And the final one is that the next AGOA forum will be held in the United States in 2024 on a date that the U.S. administration will announce. And that provides a useful place to get for lobbying, to get that forum to provide final clarity on the time frames. What we were able to bank in this particular forum that was held in Johannesburg is a wide appetite for the extension of AGOA. And what we now need to do And I think congressional representatives heard us and the U.S. administration heard African countries that the sooner we get to a final decision, the better. In the past, there's been an instance where the decision was taken literally as the legislation was expiring, and we've made the case to the U.S. administration and to Congress that it will be enormously helpful to everyone if there's a much earlier decision to renew and to extend, because that provides a very useful guide. And the number of messages that have come from the U.S. administration and Congress that supports extension is much earlier than normally would be the case. So we remain hopeful that that's a good sign that we can get an early decision on the extension of AGOA. We've provided more information in the next few slides, but these were information that I'm not going to take the committee through, because it's information that we have provided to the committee covering trade, the structure of trade, the U.S.-South Africa trade relationship, and the legal framework, as well as the benefits of AGOA. So, Chair, can I then conclude my remarks and thank you for this opportunity, and say that I was particularly struck by the enormous unity of purpose within South Africa's delegation at AGOA, that we had business and labor representatives as well as civil society participating in discussions with their counterparts, and they all spoke unified voice. We were also joined by our counterparts from other African countries, and they too were all of a similar view. We were also very pleased that we got the support of American business people, trade unionists, and civil society, as well as expressions of support from the U.S. administration and the U.S. Congress. So thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity. May I then hand back to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the briefing. Before we take questions, any update, Ms. Solomons, on YouTube?
Yes, Chair, they've joined the platform.
They've joined the platform. Okay. All right, no, that's fine. Can we, Honorable Members, have questions? You can raise our hands. I'll start with the Honorable Murray.
Chairperson, my raise the hand function is not working at the moment.
Okay, you'll be next day after Honorable Murray. Any other hands? Okay, let's start then with the followed by Honorable AP from the Faith Asia. Honorable Murray, you can go first.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Minister, for honoring your commitment and briefing us at the NCOP. Your feedback is very much welcomed. I do have a few questions of clarity. So I think, firstly, I'm quite interested to hear what the discussions and agreements were, particularly with regards to agriculture, noting that it is a very important industry to our province. And I know, of course, that we want to see growth in this. So to understand better or expand on this point, were there any new additions or removals to the proposed legislation were negotiated for the next renewal of AGOA? And also, what steps should be taken in the legislation to kind of broaden and support the agricultural sector? Then this is a question I've asked before, but it's one that I've struggled to get clarity on, is on the number of jobs on the line when it comes to AGOA. From my side, I'm particularly interested in the number of jobs in the Western Cape, because from the department or the provincial department of agriculture, we see that directly linked jobs are at about 140,000. And so if the department could share, or the minister could share more numbers and figures, that would be very helpful. Then I'm quite curious as well about the engagements with the US, and I wanted to understand in this context what specifically the next legislative measures are. So it was mentioned that the legislators will present these bills. If we can find out, please, who those legislators are, and also to request that we can be kept updated
on the congressional timelines that are related. And then in terms of concerns, if there were any concerns raised by the U.S. counterparts on South Africa and how these were from Mauritius, I'm glad to hear that that doesn't sound like it's going to be the case anymore.
Honorable Marie, can you just repeat the question that you've just asked, because we were breaking for a minute?
Oh, okay. So the second last question was whether there were any concerns raised by U.S. counterparts on South Africa's inclusion in AGOA and how these were addressed. And then my last question is, with regards to Mauritius being graduated, what is the risk that South Africa might also be graduated at a later stage, or that the U.S. might decide to revoke membership at a later stage, and how will this risk be mitigated? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Marie. Honorable Universities.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Also from my side, my appreciation for the extensive presentation by the Minister. Minister, there's been in your presentation an acronym which I take as perhaps might refer to phytosanitary measures. As we know, agricultural exports, are not only determined by things such as the import tariffs on the other side, but we've seen in the case of some countries that they make it extremely difficult for South African farmers to export due to these phytosanitary measures, where, for example, our citrus fruit need to be cooled for an extensive period to very, very low temperatures to safeguard those other countries against diseases such as the false codling moth. Although we've been exporting fruit for decades to those countries, and it seems to me as if the climatic conditions in those countries do not support such insects, and therefore pose very little risk to those countries. So my question is just, to what extent, when we negotiate in terms of the agreement going forward, and to make it easy for Southern African countries to export to the USA, to what extent would we also be able to influence other barriers that might be put up in, can I say, sometimes we get the impression that it's in an effort to curb or to make life more difficult for our exporters from South Africa. Then the second one is just also in terms of perhaps expanding this agreement, what is your take on the appetite of perhaps also including other potential export products that have not been covered in the existing agreement with the USA? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Honorable Ambassador, you'll forgive me, I said you were going to come in immediately after Honorable Marie. Sorry for that. You can come in now.
Thank you very much. Minister, mine is more comments than questions. Minister, I think we need to congratulate you on a job well done bringing the whole of Africa together with the U.S. partners and bringing the South African contingent on a national basis together without the negative connotations that some people may want to present sometimes in the foreign arena, and they don't realize how it impacts negatively on South Africa, South African exports, and South African business. Minister, I would suggest that we need to harmonize what we're doing with the Africa Free Trade Agreement, especially with the African ambassadors stationed in Addis, together with the African ambassadors stationed in the U.S., to in fact harmonize the programs that we in fact want to take forward. And then, Minister, I want to suggest that either yourself or a delegation briefed by yourself meets with all the blocs in Africa, or and actually explain to them and get them on board to take this fourth minister as well. Then just in response to the question about the citrus thing, Chairman Hai, myself, and I think Powell and Honorable Moimang were at the South Africa EU Parliament, where we raised the same questions. And I think we got a certain amount of degree of consensus around those issues. But the Europeans, I think, sometimes say something at a parliamentary level and another thing at an executive level. But I think when we come back with that report, Chairperson, I think we should also report on our trip to Europe regarding those matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ambassador. Honorable Moimang.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also take this opportunity to express my appreciation from the briefing that the Minister has given to us. Indeed, it's correct that the presentation built on the presentation that the Minister gave us previously. And the outcome of the summit indeed confirmed that the leadership that the minister is providing in relation to AGOA, to the country, must quite be appreciated, and that the concern raised by other people that we're trying to sort of create an impression that AGOA was under threat. There was nothing around that. And I think that that is a result of the leadership that the minister has given in relation to AGOA. Now, the critical to me is the process. How far is the process? Because the minister indicated the post-summit process and that the extension of AGOA requires a decision of the U.S. Congress. I think it would be important probably just to get a sense in terms of at what level is this process around extension? Because it's always important to deal with the uncertainty that goes hand in hand with the failure on the part of the extension to take place, particularly to the regional blocks that are relying on the leadership that South Africa is providing. What would be quite critical also is to get a sense in terms of the legislators, because I think the minister indicated that the congressional advisors will brief senators and representatives on the outcomes of the forum, and then that will entail the two bills on AGOA. It's always important to get a sense as to whether is there any cause for concern if that process has not started. But more than that, in terms of the benefit to the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, I think it's quite important that there is an opportunity for AGOA to be able to broaden the opportunities provided by this trade agreement. Lastly, Minister, countries that were removed because of their domestic affairs, Niger, Burundi, is there an opportunity once probably the civilian rule in those countries comes into play that there's a possibility that those countries could be readmitted as part of the parcel of AGOA? Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you so much, Honorable Maima. Let's go back to you, Minister, for the responses. We'll leave another round, Honorable Members, if there's there are any. Honorable Maima, Honorable Dango, if you can lower your hands, please.
Jefferson, thank you very much. Can I also thank the Honorable Members for some of the very warm comments that have been made. Of course, with these things, success always requires the effort of many, many different people. And I want to, instead of, although the members of the committee have been very generous in their comments, I want to recognize the enormous amount of work that was done also by our partners from other African countries and from the business community and organized labor. They've been there step by step backing our efforts to get AGOA renewed and to get it renewed as soon as possible. On the specific questions, Jefferson, starting with the questions raised by Honorable Murray, on agriculture, there was a session that dealt specifically with agriculture and looked at what are the opportunities to do more on the agriculture front. And in addition to that, that was really an opportunity where we had representatives from government, the private sector, and others able to reflect on the agricultural opportunities. We also looked, I had floated with representatives from the various players in the U.S. political establishment, what the appetite would be to expand on the number of products, and it's a matter I'll come back to under the questions raised by Honorable van der Westhuizen. So with agriculture, I think it's if I had to codify the issues, it would be things like sanitary and phytosanitary measures, market opportunities, partnerships that can be formed, how to ensure that technical standards are improved on the African continent, and also what we can do to promote food security on the African continent. Using, yes, access to the U.S. market is one of many instruments, but also through more scientific methods of agricultural production and building regional value chains. If you have drought in one part of the continent, we should not have populations in that area being completely at risk when we have value chains that would have opportunities in other parts of the continent to source agricultural products. So having a more coordinated, thoughtful approach to agriculture was one of the things that came out. We did give some thought to the steps taken to broaden agricultural products, and I'll come back to it when I deal with Honorable van der Westhuizen's questions. On the jobs in line, as I have indicated in the previous meeting of this committee, there is no clear, simple methodology to calculate the number of jobs that are affected by a particular trade agreement. Sometimes trade secretaries and the private sector and governments do that to give a very general thing. But let me give an example. Let's say South Africa is a a significant exporter of grapes to the United States. And let's say in grapes or in any agricultural products, and I'm going to use a few examples, numbers, just by way of illustration, not to say that they relate to this example of grapes. I don't want the grape farmers to think I'm talking specifically about them, or citrus for that matter. Now, maybe let me use citrus because it came up from Honorable Van der Westhuizen. And if we have an advantage, let's say a 5% advantage in the U.S. market, because for argument, the tariff is 5%. If all else remains the same, we can calculate what is the likely impact if that tariff preference was removed. Ordinarily, it would mean our product would go in at a price 5% higher. We can then do a sensitivity study in the U.S. market to see, are we, do we have major competitors, either domestic competitors in the U.S. market or other exporters, whose products are within that 1 to 5% price range. If it transpires that their products are significantly more than 5% more expensive than South African products, then the impact may be neutral, meaning the loss of that preference may have no impact. If, on the other hand, it is at 4%, it depends on the price decisions of South African exporters. Do they cut their prices by 1% to retain that market share or not? If it is a 5%, you know, there's someone else, it's 4.5% within price range, then we may face some stiff competition if we lose our preference. Now, I'm giving that as an example to say, if, however, the South African exchange rate weakens by more than 5%, then our competitive, price competitive advantage on the U.S. market rises by that percent. So if the Rand was to weaken by 7%, then our price competitiveness increases by 7%. Conversely, if the Rand was to strengthen by 7%, then our price disadvantage in the U.S. market rises by 7%. Now, I've just taken two factors. I've just taken the preference level and the exchange rate. I've not thrown in what Honorable Van der Westhuizen has raised, which is the SPS measures, and I'll come back to that, to say that it is very hard to build a reliable model that will calculate what the impact will be on jobs in a given area. It is clear that South Africa would still be able to sell agricultural products without those preferences, but it is also likely that we won't sell all of the products we currently sell, that it will be a negative impact on South Africa's agricultural exports and car exports and so on. So I have taken note in previous correspondence that and public statements that have been made that different players, for example, agricultural players, banks in South Africa and others have all done their estimates of what they think the impact of loss of AGOA will be. I've also shared with the committee that AGOA accounted last year for ballpark 2% of South Africa's total exports. To give some context to the fact that it is a measure worth retaining and worth fighting for to retain, but we are not going to get a consensus between two different economists on what the jobs impact would be. I've looked at figures in American reports and they vary greatly year by year. I've looked at data from the South African private sector and they are out of line with each other and with what is in international studies. So coming back to it, we should recognize that every job that we have in South Africa is worth defending and trying to retain. And the AGOA does give us an advantage onto the US market. That there is no simple methodology to calculate the number of jobs that will be lost in a particular sector through loss of benefits of a AGOA. I've taken note of the comments by various industry players, and I think members of the Western Cape Legislature has also written to my department repeating that those numbers. So I've taken note of all of those. But there isn't a methodology that will give us an absolutely accurate sense of the jobs impact. On the legislatures, the two legislators are John Kennedy and Chris Coons. The next steps are, as I've outlined on the penultimate slide today, that representatives or advisors and counselors to the senators and the House representatives are now and will now be briefing their committees and their members on the insights out of the AGOA forum, and that the further steps will be that more legislators are expected to put forward their own views on the extension and the terms of the extension, and that we will monitor that. When we've got to critical mass, in other words, where we can see that a number of the views are now known, then we could probably have a much better sense of the time frames. In the meantime, we will do what we need to do, and the Washington Ambassadorial Corps of sub-Saharan African countries are now engaging U.S. Policymakers and influencers to try to make the point around AGOA. Were there concerns raised by the United States and South Africa's inclusion in AGOA? In the formal sessions that I attended, no. The previous concerns I have reported to the committee, this committee, the joint committee of the NCOP and the portfolio committee in September this year. On Mauritius's graduation, is it likely? Well, we've made the argument to the US government that we believe it would not be appropriate to graduate Mauritius. We provided the detailed arguments on technical arguments as well as policy arguments and why we felt it would be inappropriate. And South Africa does not have the immediate danger of its per capita income being cited. But again, as I've indicated, exchange rates can determine how your per capita income is calculated. So it is something that we've raised more generally also with the American administration, whether we could rethink the procedure around graduation. At the moment, graduation is a binary, you're in or you're out. There's no midway point. And we've raised with the American government a more nuanced and carefully thought through graduation policy, which they were very interested in our views. On revoking membership, the very nature of a unilateral market access is that the US is able to at any stage decide to revoke the participation of any country in the facility that is available, which is AGOA, and as was mentioned, and I'll come back to that later in response to, I think it was Honorable Moimang's question, to illustrate some of those dangers. Moving on to Honorable van der Westhuizen's questions. Honorable van der Westhuizen, you're absolutely right. That acronym stands for sanitary and phytosanitary standards. And it's really the, let's call it animal health or plant health standards that are often used in international trade for two purposes. Legitimately, to ensure that, in fact, populations and livelihoods remain safe from the possibility of disease and similar challenges being extended from one locality to another. But sometimes they're also misused. And you've given a very good example, I want to say, Honorable Van der Westhuizen, on South African citrus food. So perhaps I can briefly expand on it, because I know that some of the members of the committee would be very familiar with this, but it may be some value to any member that's not followed the detail of it. South Africa has been expanding our citrus production over a number of years. You go to a supermarket during our citrus season and the shelves are bursting with the most delicious citrus fruit you can find anywhere in the world, and it's South African made. And that's not just my view. I have shared citrus fruit with a number of European political representatives, including more than one head of state. And having had them eat our citrus fruit, I've asked them whether this is not some of the most fantastic citrus fruit that they've tasted, and they've generally concurred with me. But because we were growing our citrus fruit, in our view, we were beginning to challenge the dominance of traditional players in the market. Spain is the world's biggest exporter of citrus fruit. South Africa has become the world's second biggest exporter of citrus fruit. And for that reason, in our view, we've had more and more protectionist tendencies in the European Union around citrus fruit, led by a campaign by Spanish farmers. Initially, they identified something called CBS citrus black spot as the ostensible reason for wanting to limit South African, first monitor and then limit South African citrus exports. So parts of South Africa that has citrus black spot is not given access to the European Union market. Then at a later point, they identified what they call false codling moth as another reason to limit South African exports to European markets, and they've started to introduce about a year and a half ago a set of measures that require us to chill our fruit from effectively the time they leave our ports, and that adds an enormous additional cost. If I look at the estimates of what the cost is for both CBS and false codling moth, it's about 4 billion rand of additional costs visited on our farmers, and it's done to limit the competitiveness of South African citrus fruit. And in our view, it's an absolutely clear and naked protectionist measure. It's not informed by science. It's not proportionate in terms of the trade rules. And We are busy taking this matter up with the European Union, and we've lodged some of our concerns on one of these two with the World Trade Organization. Now, how do we influence this? Next year, there will be a World Trade Organization meeting that will take place, and it is our intention to ensure at that meeting that the South African position, which talks to the misuse of sanitary and phytosanitary measures, will feature on the agenda. That it will be an opportunity for us to try to see, can we tighten the trade rules so that there is less scope for people to misuse the existing trade rules. So the place where that can happen, the Honorable Van der Westhuizen, is through what we call multilateral negotiations at the World Trade Organization. And as regards AGOA and the expansion of the agreement, I floated at the session with the U.S. congressional advisors what the appetite was to expand the number of products. I gave a few examples. For example, I took beef products as an instance where the bulk of beef products are not covered by AGOA. I took a few value chains, African value chains, and I pointed to parts of those value chains that are not given the preference. And the advice that we got from the U.S. representatives is that, of course, we can raise those, but it will take them some time to do the necessary impact studies to see, are there American domestic producers that are affected by this? And if so, to what extent are they affected? And so the calculation we need to make is that if we ask for a significant number of additional products to be added, or even some additional products to be added, will it so delay a decision in the U.S. administration and by Congress that we stand the danger of AGOA expiring without this matter having been resolved? Will we get now beef farmers in the U.S. mobilizing against the extension of AGOA if they see there's a danger that beef could be added? So that's one set of considerations that we need to take into account. The second set of considerations, and Honorable Van der Westhuizen may have seen in the presentation that I referred to the fact that we floated the idea of a two-stage reform program, that in stage one, we try to essentially extend the existing benefits, maybe with small tweaks, and that we do that expeditiously, in other words, quickly, that we get certainty as soon as is possible and as early in 2024 as is possible, and that we don't wait until September 2025. And that a second phase would be improvements in AGOA, where we can bring in additional products and other important refinements. So the Americans know that we are cautious, that we want to move rapidly and quickly on extension, but we do have some products that we thought would be worth considering. We haven't made a big public statement on those products because at this stage, it's not in our interest to get a number of lobby groups in the U.S. feeling threatened by the extension of AGOA. We've got to manage this with due care, respectful about the economic interests that there may be in the United States. Those farmers and workers also have interests that they would want to look after. Keen, obviously, to advance South African and African interests, and needing to find an appropriate balance on these. And so that is informing our thinking on it, Honorable Van der Westhuizen. On the questions raised by Honorable Dango, first, thank you very much, Honorable Dango, for your comments. And you've made an important point, which is how to harmonize trade arrangements within the African continent. And there's a few aspects to it. The first aspect is obviously lowering our own trade barriers between African countries to foster greater trade through the AFCFTA. And if I look at my travel record in the last couple of years, I have gone to other African countries significantly more regularly than I have gone to any one other part of the world, because so much of our work is exactly as you've indicated, to harmonize more of our economic relations and our trade. God willing, there's also an opportunity for us to make this case in December at the meeting of African trade ministers, and again next year. In those discussions, we meet not only with the different regions, but we very often have these meetings with trade ministers at a bilateral level. Most of our focus has been on rules of origin, and the best de-risking strategy in an uncertain world, and the world is uncertain in many, many different ways,
But a good de-risking strategy is to build the competitiveness of our own sectors and to increase trade among African countries. And many of the challenges that we face in markets in other parts of the world could be moderated, could be reduced by us trading more with each other. Africa imports an enormous quantity of goods, and that represents an opportunity for African producers to do more. Honorable Dango, thank you for reminding us of the engagement that South African parliamentarians had with their EU counterparts on citrus. Of course, we welcome every effort that is made to help make the argument. But even after that meeting, we again heard some really challenging comments coming from some economic interests in the European Union. Honorable Moimang, thank you for your questions too. The processes on extension, if I can start from our side, South Africa, ours is very simple. Because this is a unilateral market access, there's nothing more we need to do at the level of legal modalities. If indeed the American Congress approves the extension on the current terms, then we would simply utilize our existing framework. If there were changes made by the United States that affects maybe a technical standard for products or exclusion of products, we will communicate that to the market in South Africa. On the American side, of course, the U.S. Congress sits with a large number of legislative and other priorities that they need to look at. And they will then consider trade agreements with other parts of the world, AGOA, which is not a trade agreement, but unilateral opening, their legislative program on U.S. domestic issues, their budget processes. And those are matters that we can lobby, but fundamentally those are decisions that are taken there. As if, for example, the South African government was to introduce a bill in Parliament, ultimately it is up to Parliament to decide the dates when it will consider the bill. And we've had bills going through the South African Parliament rapidly, and we've had others taking some while. So each legislature has their own rules on it. But the key is to get the support of both the Republicans and the Democrats so that we make this a bipartisan issue. In the same way that I've tried to make the point in discussions in South Africa, that as South Africans, we need to have a common view on AGOA and be supportive of each other's efforts to promote the extension of AGOA. And in the U.S., they up to now have not turned AGOA into a political football where the one party tries to score points against the other party. And that's been very helpful to us because it means that bipartisan support can be counted on. Of the two bills in the U.S. Congress already, one is from a Republican and one is from a Democrat. So they may have different views on the modalities, but both parties so far in their public statements have expressed support for AGOA and for the extension. On the cost or the risks of AGOA not being extended, as with any market access arrangement, the value of the access is important to different sectors in the economy. And so we would be working very hard to try to ensure that we retain access. We also look at the measures we can take to try to address issues like the cost of compliance. Sometimes, and it links your question to that, the observation by Honorable Van der Westhuizen too, sometimes
countries or trading blocs put in place a sanitary and phytosanitary measure, and we can assist our firms, our farmers, to better understand what those are and to see how we de-risk in South Africa on those sanitary and phytosanitary standards. On the two bills before the U.S. Congress, the one bill goes for a very lengthy extension, even longer than the 10 years that African trade ministers have proposed. But we think that these are the opening bids that are made in the U.S. Congress, and they both envisage a period longer than 10 years. I wanted to also comment very briefly on the remark that Honorable Moimang has made about exclusion. And there are four countries that were taken out of AGOA and one country that was added back in. The countries that were taken out of AGOA now recently, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, were Uganda, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and Niger. And the reasons given by the U.S. administration is human rights violation and failure to make democratic progress. And African ministers have urged the United States to engage with the countries concerned and find ways to address the concerns of both sides with a view to having those countries back in AGOA. They're still in AGOA until the 31st of December, but we'd like them obviously to continue even beyond that. One country, Mauritania, has been added back. So even if you're taken out of AGOA, you can be added back to AGOA as long as you are a sub-Saharan African country and as long as you've not been graduated out, you've been removed for a specific reason. If you've been graduated out on per capita income, on the existing rules, your per capita income would have to change. But as I said, we've also brought that matter up in discussion to see how we can moderate and refine the existing provision on graduation. I hope that has covered all the questions. With one of Honorable Moimang's questions, I got the gist of it, but there was just a little bit of a challenge with the audio on my side. I hope I caught enough of the gist to have responded fully to that that question by Honorable Moimang. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the responses. Honorable members, are there any follow-up questions? Honorable Marie, any other hands? Over to you, Honorable Marie.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just two final questions, or three final questions from me. The first is, I do appreciate the Minister's explanation with regards to why the jobs figure can't be shared. And I guess my request then is just if you could share the calculations that he has with regards to essentially what is at stake when it comes to AGOA and our route to market or this route to market. Then, Chair, if the Minister did mention that there was a proposed graduation policy that has been presented to US counterparts for South Africa, if you could please provide us with more details on this, including when, if implemented, it would commence. And then lastly, which industries were represented at the summit? Thank you.
Yes, so much. Any other questions? This is the last round. Okay. Back to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Honorable Marie. On the jobs figures, as I've indicated, we have not done the calculation in that form, but what I can make available is information that we have shared previously that indicates the preference level and the products that are involved. But I would do it with a cautionary, which I'm sure honorable members will take, that obviously there are multiple factors that influence whether we land a product in the United States. Under the existing rules, we have guaranteed access to the U.S. markets for all of our products, except products that there is a prohibition which would not be permitted in WTO rules. And we have that access through what is called the most favored nation, the MFN principle. So even aside from the preferential access, it would still be MFN access. But if MFN access is less favorable than AGOA access, so we do believe that there's value in retaining the AGOA access. There are some challenges in certain products. For example, South African steel has a very significant anti-dumping duty. If I can put it this way, it's introduced not in the normal trade rules, which an anti-dumping duty would be an exceptional duty to take account of dumping. This is a provision in American legislation called Section 232, which is a national security provision. And so we apply via permit effectively to get access for South African steel and aluminium to the U.S. market, and those are annual. We've had constructive conversations with the U.S. on those. I call it really an attempt at anti-dumping duty, although it's technically not that. On the graduation policy, of course, because we're negotiating with trade partners, we are cautious, as in any negotiation, about what we disclose during the course of the negotiations. Because if we were to do it in that way, then we would not be able to ever get any progress in trade negotiations. So there's a convention that apply all over that, other than the public position of countries, they take a very cautious approach. So on graduation policy, we don't want to put a proposal on the table that the U.S. may not support. So there's informal discussions. We've given them an essential principle around graduation that we think they should consider. There are technical arguments we've raised in respect of Mauritius. It's also policy arguments we've raised. And essentially, when we get the feedback that the U.S. Side indicates that they believe that there's value in them revisiting a graduation clause, then we will formalize it and pass it to our U.S. counterparts. Now, in normal trade negotiations, one party put the proposal on the table and the other one responds, and then we respond in turn, and ultimately the hope is we get agreement. Because AGOA is not a trade agreement, it's a unilateral trade facility, at the end of the day, the U.S. will have a carte blanche on their graduation policy. If I can then elaborate a little bit on the principle behind it, recognizing, as I've indicated, that we're cautious not to press some of these matters in the public domain. But essentially what we've said is, at the moment you have a binary arrangement, you're fully in or you're fully out. And there may be value in considering that if you reach a certain per capita income, if you're below a certain per capita income, you get the full benefits. As your society develops and you get a higher per capita income, you can then get perhaps a truncated set of benefits, but you don't lose everything. So it's thinking through a gradual, step-by-step move from being fully in a goer to, with time, slowly losing some of the benefits as your level of development arises. Now, we've raised that because
the fundamental principle in the U.S. legislation is that this is intended for countries below a certain level of development. That's the cornerstone of AGOA. It doesn't even cover the whole African continent. It only covers sub-Saharan African countries, and it has an approach on income. At the technical level, we've pointed to some of the challenges with per capita income, particularly in societies with high levels of income inequality, that it's not always a proxy for development, for reasons that I think economists readily concede, that if you have high levels of equity in a society, then a per capita income very often approximates measure of aggregate welfare. Where you don't have that, you've got huge inequalities, then it may simply be an average that does not describe whether a very large number of people, the vast majority of people, have high or rising standards of living. So the formal graduation policy, we haven't put on the table. We're engaging, we're exploring ideas, and at an appropriate moment, we will then put something on the table if we get a signal that there's definitely an appetite to revisit it. If the signal is that there's no appetite to revisit the graduation policy, then we would not want to put something on the table and have that be cited as a reason to delay consideration of the extension of AGOA. On the third question, which industries were represented? Well, no industries were represented in the formal sense of the word represented, because AGOA, the forum itself where the governments spoke to each other, had trade ministers that were the representatives. They were supported by technical experts from their departments and ministries. And where necessary, they had technical expertise from a range of other departments or ministries. From the American side, they were represented by the United States Trade Representative, but she had very senior representatives from a number of different departments, like the U.S. Department of State, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Commerce, and others. What we did have is a number of industries whose products were exhibited at the industrial exhibition and at the food fair that we hosted. We also had a number of industries at the private sector forum and at the labor forum, from trade union or worker representatives. And of course, in all of that, I had requested that we also give an opportunity to have the voices of businesses reflected when we had these policy discussions in the format of breakaway sessions. So we had a number of breakaway sessions. For example, there was one on the health sector, there was one on food, and so on. If I look at whether there was participation in one or more of the different activities that together make up the AGOA forum, then I would say most sectors of the South African economy found an opportunity to play a part. Agriculture was definitely there. We had agricultural products on display, including food products, quite a bit of food products. We had representatives from the agricultural sector that we invited to be on panels that had discussions and shared ideas. Food security was one, as I indicated. We had, for example, the mining industry participating in some of the discussions, different parts of manufacturing, the service sectors, like your telecommunications sectors. And at the forum of the private sector, BUSA, that's Business Unity South Africa, the BBC, that's the Black Business Council, and BLSA, that's Business Leadership South Africa, all participated in the private sector forum, and they together represents the entirety of organized business in South Africa, and they would have drawn their members from just about every sector of the South African economy, and all your big industry associations in agriculture, in mining, in steel, and so on, would be members of one of these federations of businesses. So that would be the industrial sectors that we, within the space that I had as host, I tried to provide as many moments of, as many opportunities for the voices of industries to be shared with trade ministers so that we get the benefit of their views when we considered the matters that was on the agenda of GOA. I hope that addresses the questions that Honorable Marie has raised, and I again would like to thank you, Chairperson, and hand back to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the responses. I hope members are satisfied with the responses. We will be all of us monitoring the developments, particularly in the U.S. Congress. We will then from time to time invite the minister to brief us on the developments in the U.S. with regard to AGOA. But also the minister, if he thinks that there's an opportunity for us or for him to brief the committee, we'll be flexible with our program. We'll review our program to accommodate him, to brief us and the provinces. But I think we need to take it further that we're not only focusing on AGOA. There's all these other international platforms where South Africa will participate in. The SAEU discussions, perhaps we need to invite the minister and the department, as well as the provinces. Provinces are beneficiaries of these agreements. Whether it's I think it was last year, as a committee, we invited the department, DDG Xavier came to brief us on the outcome of the MC12. Perhaps we'll do the same next year after February. Invite the minister to brief us on the MC18, and we will also invite the provinces, because in the past we just invite the department, the select committee, but this time around I think it's good that we should also invite the provinces to be part of those platforms. Whether the BRICS, minister brief us on the BRICS, particularly in issues that relate to trade. Even there, we have to invite the provinces. Whether it's the, I don't know if the minister, I know president participate in the G20. Sometimes they will bring the delegation ministers to be part of the G20. So the minister could brief us as a committee together with the provinces on the discussions at the level of the G20. So I think perhaps it was a mistake on our part to just, as a province, to just say, as a committee, to invite the department just on our own. So we want to extend this platform to also include the provinces, whether it's AGOA, it's SAEU, it's MC, whether it's MC 12, 18, 14, to invite the provinces as well to be part of this particular forum. Thank you very much, Minister. Let me give you the closing remarks before we adjourn the meeting.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity to address the committee and the representatives from provinces. And we have a lot of work to do still, and we will be rolling out more information. We'll also use virtual platforms to try to reach more businesses, but also focus on trying to get more work done for opportunities for smaller businesses, women-owned businesses, and bringing more young people into exports. Those are very important ways in which we can strengthen our export efforts, because these help to create jobs in South Africa. It expands the GDP, and of course, by having profitable and well-functioning businesses, they increase investment in the economy, and we can collect tax that can help to pay for the healthcare, housing, education, and other needs of South Africa's people. Thank you very much also to members of the committee, as well as members of the provincial legislatures, for the time you've given, for the questions and comments that you've made. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much again, Honourable Minister, and also thanks to the Honourable Members, Select Committee from the provinces. We like also to apologize to the legislators, the provincial legislature, that this was a short notice, but we'll make sure that next time we give enough time for you to prepare. Thanks to all the provinces. I would also like to thank my own province, the Eastern Cape, also the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development. Eastern Cape is one of the beneficiaries of the AGOA in terms of the auto sector in particular. Thank you, Honorable Ndamase, for attending, and also to other members of the provincial legislatures. Thanks to the DG, I saw the DG of the department join us later, and thanks to her and the DDGs, as well as other officials of the department, the officials of the committee, officials of the parliament as a whole. Thank you very much. These days, I would like to indicate that till we see each other again. Minister, I'm sure we'll be seeing again each other next week, possible, on the Companies Amendment Bill, if things go well in the MA. Thank you very much. See you on Tuesday morning. Thank you so much, Minister, and honourable members. And, good afternoon.
Welcome. Thanks, Dr. Chairman.
Thank you so much.